Goodness.
In between the UofL news and COVID news and everything else, they sneak in that declassified FBI document that finally got revealed the last couple of days, which showed some light on the Saudi complicity of 9/11 terror attacks right around 9/11, which is very convenient. But as we all knew without proof that the Saudis were involved with all that, but again, we just forgive whatever the Saudis want to do, and just they can continue to be Saudis and do whatever they want, and and no repercussions. But what this does do is that it does, there's a lawyer, Brett Eagleson, a spokesman for the families of the 9/11 victims, Dave, that are suing the Saudi government for their involvement of 9/11. Which I'm all for.
Absolutely.
Sue their ass. And they're so arrogant, they'll probably write you a check and whatever.
It'll be lunch money for them.
But these are the stories, Dave, that gets that falls in between the cracks when they want us to be distracted and everything else, right? Get the shot, don't get the shot. Who's dying?
It's like a news dump on a Friday.
It is, and it's like...
This was well known that the Saudis were connected, or at least the people, a lot of them were from Saudi Arabia, but this is the place where the prince is having people murdered in embassies and that sort of thing.
They get a free pass.
And by the way, what do we need with them anymore? I know if we would open the pipelines back up, we don't need their oil.
We don't need their oil.
So what is the connection for us there?
That's a
supposedly it is a semi-moderate ally in the region. But with Israel, that's really all we need.
So that's a great point, because we started building bases during the Reagan era. Because we knew, man, this is all going to explode. We'd love to have things already there in place so when we can help whoever, right? So that was the deal. I remember watching 60 Minutes in high school and watching them building the bases in Saudi Arabia and how that was a big deal. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. Why are we building bases in Saudi? So all that, now we're 40 years later, because that was the 1980s. So we're 40 years later. What do we need? We are oil efficient.
I've never gotten a good answer on that, by the way. What do we need Saudi Arabia for?
We have more oil than we can. We should be selling most of our oil to the rest of the world and making a ton of money. I'm not against government sinking a couple of oil wells and start to help with our taxes would be nice.
Sure.
Why don't you just grab some of that oil and some of these natural, whatever, these lands that we own and start selling it?
But OPEC, again, would not be a factor if we would keep drilling in Alaska
right.
And open up the Keystone Pipeline again.
Yeah, absolutely. So just get that going. But that's a great question, and for much smarter people than me, to answer of why we still need a great relationship with Saudi Arabia.
It's the same time, and it's happened several times in the States. Somebody would get up into Frankfurt and try to investigate gas prices and why Louisville's are this way and that way, and
right.
they come out of these meetings and go, I don't know. It's the same thing with Saudi Arabia. Why do we need them? Well, you know, there's the oil.
Well, there's the thing.
I don't know really why we need them.
But the Middle East, what a fantastic area of the planet, huh?
Yeah, it's really time for us to limit our involvement to protecting Israel.
Sort this out yourself.
Let's stop nation building in parts of the world that hated themselves and each other long before we arrived.
They don't want us there.
No.
So.
Anywho.
Yes. A father is furious. His son refers to him as by his first name.
Hey, Bill. Does the kid know something that dad doesn't?
He shared this story on Reddit. Is the Am I an A-hole forum. I love this forum.
It's awesome.
His 16-year-old son randomly started calling him by his first name. No matter how much he told his son, stop doing that. I am dad or father, either one. Even his wife didn't seem to care that much about the situation, but the dad was like, I can't have it. I don't want this. My name's not Tony. It's dad.
Right.
Okay. So he said, you either stop referring to me as dad or I'm going to take your electronics and you're grounded.
Pretty reasonable.
Yes. So everyone's getting on the dad.
Respect your elders.
Yes. Reddit's making fun of the dad. I was like, no. You're blowing this out of proportion. You're a control freak.
Is this kid going to be able to go to school and say, hey, Louise, I'm sorry, my paper's late?
No.
You can't do it at home either.
Louise is probably the sweet teacher, though.
Oh, she is. That's okay. You get it to me whenever you finish.
Right. Claudia from the last hour, the Tuesday's Tool, she's probably a mean teacher.
Right.
You're way overreacting, one person wrote. Grounding him and punishing him for being a moody teenager is probably not going to fix anything. No, it'll fix calling me by my first name.
Take the phone away, he'll call you whatever he wants.
You're damn right.
That's right.
The phones are a necessary evil. And they are evil. The phones are evil. There's no doubt. But the advantages are we know where our kids are 24 hours a day. We can contact them 24 hours a day.
If they're in trouble, they can call for help.
And if they get in trouble, we can take the damn phone from them.
You want to call me Bill? Get a job?
That's right.
Get an apartment?
That's right.
Pay for your own damn phone. I've got a Reddit one for you also.
Okay.
Okay. A woman is upset with her boyfriend because he's planning an expensive weekend out. With the guys, you're thinking golf trip,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, come on.
No, it's for another woman.
Whoa.
The boyfriend explained that his lifelong best friend is this woman who grew up with him in foster care.
Okay.
And they've stayed very close as adults.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, okay.
Even though they share a deep bond, he said there's nothing romantic about their relationship.
Yeah.
In fact, his BFF is married, and he's also good friends with their husband. But the current girlfriend thinks he's out of line for this date that he's planning with his bestie.
Why are we calling it a date?
Well, it starts off with reservations at a seafood restaurant. Her husband happens to be allergic to shellfish, so he's not going. He also scored tickets to a musical that she wants to see.
Yeah.
And plans for them to check out some museums and do a wine tasting.
Oh, no.
He also got him a hotel room.
Yeah, that's why they're calling it a date.
With two beds, of
course. No. Okay, that's enough.
Grand total for the best friend's weekend? $1,500.
They're sharing the same room?
Sharing the same room.
Yeah, that's a no. That's a no. I don't care how secure you are.
I'm with the girlfriend on this one.
Yeah, I don't care how secure you are. There's no way.
Nope.
You could trust someone all day long, but at that point you start to not trust, but guy going, what do you mean you're staying in the same room? And you're going to a play, you're going to a musical, you're going to dinner at a romantic place. Yeah, no. That's a lover's weekend.
Right. That's like, that'd be like Jackie saying, so Dwight and I are going to Arizona to see Saxton, and we're going to stay in the same room and have some dinner. Coincidentally, just after she saw his picture.
Look, Jackie would have the same response that I had when Dwight said, do you want to go? And I said, how much do I pay you? And he goes, for the trip? I go, no, not to go on that trip.
He asked you to go to Arizona with him?
No, but I said, I did. I said, you know, if you asked me to go, I'd tell you, how much do I have to pay not to go on this damn trip?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jackie would do the same.
I mean, some people have been known to have a few cocktails and then get on the home shopping channels and buy, some Pyrex.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Dwight got drunk, booked airfare, hotels, and concert tickets to Saxton
in the middle of the desert
in Arizona,
where no one was in line for backstage.
Motorcycle Man!
Ooh. Costco. I just became a Costco member.
Love it.
Last month, and I love it. There's one right by the station where the old Showcase Cinemas used to be, so that's where I go.
It's a lot less crowded than the one out in Springhurst, or wherever that is.
Now, is the booze in a separate spot, or is there booze inside the Costco?
Separate spot.
Okay, right. The one to the right, I guess when you walk in, you go right, and that's where all the booze is.
Yep.
All right.
They have very good Kirkland Prosecco for about $6.99 a bottle.
Okay, Costco
when
is...
When you can find it.
Yeah, by the way, I like the... I'm a bacon guy. You know that. I still love bacon.
Oh, the big bags of bacon bits.
They do. You get 5 pounds of cooked bacon, all right, which lasts us about 2 weeks. So we only warm up a couple of pieces at breakfast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think one piece or two pieces of that thinly sliced bacon, real bacon, is healthy for you.
Oh, of course it is.
So I love that. Costco is bringing back their wine and beer Advent calendars again. I grew up with the Advent calendars, and let me tell you, Now, there was four of us, four kids, so I got every fourth day, of course. But you opened the little door for the month of December, and there was a piece of chocolate in there. And in the 1970s, most kids are like, or people listening, they're like, what's that big deal?
Right.
In the 70s, there was no candy. There was no chocolate laying around the house. Like it would get consumed. If there was chocolate in the house, it was gone. There were six of us. Are you insane? So that little piece of chocolate was like a winner. You were like, oh, it's my day. How sad is it? Is it sad or great? I would lay in bed and go, it's my Advent day.
Yes, yes.
And I'd run downstairs and I'd open the little window on the calendar. It would have like a little frankincense myrrh or whatever picture on the front. I'd open it and I'd get that piece of chocolate in the morning.
Was the chocolate any good?
Oh, yeah. Well, dude, at that time, anything. It doesn't matter. It's a piece of chocolate.
Nothing worse than a hollow bunny.
Oh.
Remember those things?
Right.
It collapsed and you're like, what the hell is this?
Oh, my God. But the advent calendar was one of my favorite growing up.
Oh, now they should do it for adults and have like a little airplane-sized bottle of liquor.
That's what they're doing.
In each one.
That's what they're doing.
Yes.
The wine calendar, which costs $99, will be available in most stores in the first week of October, featuring 24 half bottles of wine in different varieties. The Brewer's Advent Calendar, which sells for $60 and was already spotted at the Florida store, comes with 24 16-ounce cans of German beer.
Aha!
Ha-ha!
That's a big calendar.
So, yes, Dave, they do have an adult Advent calendar, and it's got booze in each little door you open.
Yes, Dave, there is a Santa Claus.
There is a Santa Claus. That's exactly right. All right, Christian Brothers Roofing. These guys are the best. All right, it's owned by Aaron. Aaron has got two small kids, and the family's owned it since 1997. They do a great job, and integrity is they live by that, and they'll tell you that when they call. Them giving you a great roof for a fair price is what they live for. They have enough suppliers and great relationship with suppliers that they have the materials to put a house on your roof on your house as soon as possible. They also do commercial gutters and windows, but roofing is their bread and butter, and they're really good at it. So a fair price, a great roof, and choices. That's right, Christian Brothers Roofing. Go to christianbroroofing.com or call them at 244-0208, 244-0208. The people that work for them are awesome, and they will take care of you. Free estimates, you bet. Christian Brothers Roofing. All right, back after this. Keep it where you got it. News Radio 840 WHAS.
WHAS.
A little band from Bowling Green here, Tony.
What is it?
Cage the Elephant.
Oh, yeah, Cage the Elephant. They've played here in Louisville plenty.
Yes, probably that Forecastle show.
The Folksoul show. All right. From the Office of Resilience and Community Services.
We still have this office?
Yes, you do. They still send emails out. I just got off a text chain with my buddies that work downtown, and they were driving by, and we talked about it this weekend when I was out with them, that that they were several homeless encampments near a lot of stuff downtown where we go to.
You know, right.
Slugger Field and all this stuff. So, and one of them joked and said, I swear to God, I think somebody put a white picket fence around their homeless tent.
Well, you know what? There's so much trash and debris sometimes with these camps. If someone takes pride in their space.
Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah.
So this is from the Office of Resilience at the City Hall. City gives 21-day notice that homeless encampments will be cleared from 6 to 8 block radius downtown. Okay,
what do we do when we clear these camps? Do we put them on buses and send them to friendlier towns? What do we do?
That's a great question, because several times it's been a different sort of method. Remember, we had a bad situation to where they didn't warn them, and they came through with those bobcats and the forklifts and just cleaned everything out, threw everything away, and people got upset.
That's usually Derby time. Mayor Fisher cares about the city for about a week.
Yeah. So here's where they're bounded these streets by, okay? So they're saying 6 to 8 block radius downtown. That would be Jackson Street, Jefferson, Market, Preston, Floyd, Brook, as well as Liberty, Hancock, and Main Streets. Here's what I will tell you, and you could call me a sad person or whatever. That is where I go downtown. I don't really venture anywhere else except for Jefferson, Market, Preston, Floyd, and Brooke.
So what we're essentially doing is we're like Memphis now. We're picking out a tourist area.
Yes.
A business area.
Clear
a place of commerce.
Clear it out.
And we're saying this is going to be the safe part of town.
Yes.
Used to be everywhere pretty much.
Now, take out mental illness and drug addiction, and then there's some people that just choose to live outdoors. They don't want indoors. Even if you go to them and say, hey, we've got some options for you. You know what? I'm off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A lot of them work.
So then, when I worked in Key West when I was a teenager, there were three or four full-time employees. And let me tell you, where I worked, they got paid a lot of money. And you don't pay city or state taxes in Key West.
Right.
So your check is all your check. They had a bicycle and some clothes on the front basket of the bicycle. That was it. They were homeless and they were making, in 1988, they were making $400 a week.
Wow.
And they were homeless. So
just took showers in public facilities?
Yeah.
Or the ocean?
And of course, they worked for the restaurant. I worked for the Hooky Lau.
That's right. With Dobby.
With Dobby. Yes, right. And great restaurant. So they ate their meals at the restaurant where they worked, because you got a free meal every day when you mm-hmm. worked at the Hooky Lau. And then so they got their meals. They had $400 a week. And they just – in Key West, it's 90 degrees all year round. So, you know, it's not like they can sleep. You can sleep anywhere. Well, apparently they're going to move them out of here. So they also said they're going to expand efforts to include some recovery bed capacity at the Healing Place. Amen.
Mm-hmm.
The Healing Place is a model that is being copied all over the country because they figured it out.
And it's a private sector endeavor.
And it is a private sector endeavor. They take a little federal money, but most of it is donations. And the secret to the Healing Place, which could be the secret of a lot of these homeless folks to get off the streets from drug addiction, because you think they're, oh, these are people that were born into this situation. No, there are college graduates and lifetime workers down there that decided that got into some drug issues and all that, so they need help. But I do agree with the 6 to 8 block. Sorry, I do agree with clearing those areas out.
Sure. Well, it's a multi-tiered approach, though, because you have – Louisville has a reputation right now as a good place to do crime regionally. Gang bangers are like, there's a good place to go and get locked up.
I agree with you, but that is correct.
For 25 minutes and you're back on the street. It's also known as a place where, hey, this mayor will build you an encampment. This mayor will bring you electricity, provide bathrooms, build a homeless camp for you. So it's not just dealing with Louisville's homeless. There's an influx of homeless that come to Louisville. And if we have to stop that also.
The city's office is reading from this press release that came down just minutes ago. So they're going to try to get people to the Healing Place and Wayside Christian Mission. But what do you do with the other folks? I mean, that's where are they going to move? I guess wherever this group decides to go, that will that's where the homeless encampment will go.
They're going to settle somewhere else outside of that zone.
Right.
And it'll become a problem for people now in that zone.
Correct. Correct. The only reason I would really go to 7th Street and Ali would be to go to Louisville Gardens. But they've been closed for 10 years now.
I want that renovated so badly.
I think everyone wants that renovated, but I think it would
cost a lot. I know that.
I know, but the bones to it are obviously very, very sound. They used to be called the Armory before it was Louisville Gardens. So they use it for storage. They spend something like $30,000 a month on electricity for the place. So you'd think they would find some money with some of this federal stimulus money coming in that we could fix up Louisville Gardens. But that was basically as far as I would go, or if I had to go to the courthouse, which was 7th Street.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. So I never really ventured past that. I was never really going to Portland for any reason.
Oh, there's a couple nice little breweries, microbreweries down like at 9th and Broadway, that sort
right.
of thing.
Yeah.
There was a murder there a couple months ago. So
and
there
Caulfield's,
you go.
Caulfield's Halloween costume place was farther down. That would be maybe one time a year or one time every 3 or 4 years I would go that far. But that's literally from St. Matthew's Kid. That's as far as I would go.
It's just sad. I mean, there were times that I've been in different neighborhoods at night after shows, get lost a little bit, ask for directions. Never felt like there was a problem. I'm sad for our city that people coming in, people are going to have to say, all right, don't go past this street. Don't go past that street. Don't do that. I'm really sad for our city that way.
When you come up 71, because I live in St. Matthews, when I go downtown, usually a lot of times I just go River Road and I go the back roads to the Bats or whatever. But I came up 71 because I went over to Jeffersonville mm-hmm. to go to that online gambling's place that I've been kind of talking about on the radio. And there's a view right when you hit 71 to where the Lynn's Family Stadium is. You get the little pointy building that's mm-hmm. next to the Slugger Field.
Yep.
And then the condos, those glass condos that are in good shape. And then the Capitol building and the guardhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It's architecturally, it looks cool. It's a good view of the city.
It is.
It's a pretty city. Louisville is a nice looking, cute town. It's sad that sometimes it doesn't get that reputation, but it is a lot different than when I grew up. That's for sure.
Oh, there was nothing. I remember driving when I was a kid. We lived in Wisconsin at this time. And we'd go down to Florida or somewhere down south,
yeah.
And we'd always come through on 65.
Yeah.
I remember looking around and going, what a dump.
What a dump. All
this stuff along, it's like, what? Who lives here?
Oh, my God.
And it was still a beautiful place in other parts, but downtown was it a scrapyard?
That was the Blues, the Blue family, the two Blues brothers. The dad owned
really?
That.
The Blues brothers?
Yeah, well, there you go. They owned that scrap metal right there where all the trains were, downtown and waterfront property. And I think that's why the Blue brothers were very adamant about helping fix that up. That pointy building's theirs. They wanted that area to
be
nice.
Is that what it's called, the pointy building?
I call it the pointy building. When I say pointy building, everyone knows what the hell I'm talking
about.
That's true. But the most the striking story that I remember from John King, a friend of our show, he's been battling cancer lately, if you follow him on Facebook, but he's a Trinity guy and been around a long time. He's part of the King family. His brother was president of Metro Council mm-hmm. for a long time. But John told the story of where the botanical gardens are right now.
Right.
And he said, you know what that was for 40 years? And I'm like,
it was
what?
A dump, wasn't it?
It was a burning dump. He said that after the 37 flood, the city took all of that scrap, all the stuff that was, and piled it there. Well, it was burning. It started to burn. And it smoldered till the 70s.
Wow.
When someone decided to clean that area up.
Like cicadas.
I'm like, first of all, how do I not know that? And second of all, Harvey Sloan, all these mayors, how did you allow the waterfront to look like that for decades?
Mm-hmm.
Are you serious? So
we talk about athletic departments as the front porch for universities.
Oh, my God.
Driving across the bridge, this little kid at the time from upstate New York, eventually Wisconsin, thought of Louisville as a dump.
Yeah.
Because of what it looked like crossing a bridge.
Yeah. And then remember, Main Street was all strip clubs. That was what you'll see in Stripes. If you watch Stripes and the scene where they go into the strip club and John Candy gets in the Jell-O.
I'll do it. Mud wrestling.
Not mud, but oil wrestling.
Oh, it was
with
oil?
The two girls, right. That's on Main Street. Where the Yum Center is, where all that is, that's Main Street, downtown, 1st and 2nd Street.
And then gradually, well, we got Coyotes.
Abramson came in and said, clear it out.
Mm-hmm.
Started a program called Operation Brightside. And said, and he did a lot. What was it, Giuliani that got rid of all the stuff in New York?
Who, probably.
Yeah, he said, all this is out. You got, because remember, Times Square was strip clubs and gambling places and all that kind of stuff. And so one of the mayors said, why are we doing this? We're a world-class city. Get this out. And they put the Sonys of the world and the Target and whoever, or whatever, they cleaned it out. But that Louisville was the same story in the 70s, same thing.
And as sad as we are with the way the city is right now with crime, it can change. There was, I forget who the mayor was, took over in New York. In a year, there was 2,280 murders, I think, in a year. The next year, with the new mayor, there was 400 and something.
Yeah.
2,400 murders down with new leadership in 1 year.
In 1 year. It can happen.
It can be done.
It can be done.
We've got to stop electing the same people.
Well, and we got to stop having stupid statements. The bumper sticker mentality has got to go. I live by this, you know, defund the police. Stop.
Stop it.
That's just dumb. I mean, even Barack Obama said it. He goes, you know, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. He had paraphrasing, but he said that was a mistake. By the left to say, defund the police. Come on, that's just silly. All right, so let's end on a good note. Or do we have time?
We always have time for a good note.
All right, we always do red flags in relationships, right? Run if this happens.
Let's do the
green flags.
Head in the freezer, run.
We're going to end the show pretty much here on some good feel-good relationship stuff.
Sounds good.
So these are stay with this person if this is the way they make you feel, basically, instead of doing the run. Okay, number one, you feel better when you're with them and you're fine. But you're fine when you're not, but you just feel better when you're with them.
Yeah.
You know, that's important. If your partner faces, you know, when you It's always about not what you say. It's how you feel when you talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. That's what you say. All right. You can easily, number two, you can easily talk about big issues with them. That's important. Is to be able to talk political issues and stuff with your partner without screaming at each other.
My wife and I can do that because we agree now.
Yeah, it's right. Number three, you argue, but you always work it out.
We almost never argue.
You are the one percenters of the world.
We are.
I think so. We don't argue much. I mean, it's very rare. It's got to build up and then something's got to explode.
You're kind of like a blowhole though.
Yes.
Eventually you have to get some steam out of there.
I can't help it. I'm trying to work through that and all that, but I do kind of keep things in and then everybody get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I literally 10 minutes later, I'm fine. But it is
a blowhole.
You've seen it before.
The vein on my
neck starts to bulge. All right, so number four, you feel loved and appreciated.
Yes, I do every day.
We don't get that a lot, though. When you get long-term relationships, the appreciation part falls to the side, especially if you have kids and your busy lifestyle.
Well, you have to be careful not to just expect it and not recognize it.
I've always said to Jackie, I was like, do you notice when one of us gets like the flu and we're down for like 10 days? How the house doesn't work as well. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of off. And maybe the laundry piles up or the dishes pile up or something goes wrong with the kids at school or something because it's a team effort. And when one person's out, I've always said that when people get divorced, they don't realize what the other person is doing in the relationship.
That's true.
They're just blind to that fact. So appreciation is. So on this, if you talk to your spouse or your girlfriend or your boyfriend later, show a little appreciation.
That's right.
I appreciate what you do.
I'm not going to take it for granted.
No, the last one I think is the biggest. Are you ready?
I am.
You share the same values in life.
Bingo.
That's really crucial. I think there's want kids, don't want kids, religion, no mm-hmm. religion, booze, no booze, whatever it is. I think that, especially the kids in the religion part, but you got to share the same principles and values, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's important. I think it's the most important thing on this list is that last one.
I mean, if you're like, I'm into human trafficking, she's not, you know, it's just not going to
stop.
Not going to work.
But it's rare. And listen, and here's the thing. When people get sober or they find religion, a lot of times relationships don't work. Right? That doesn't work mm-hmm. because one was an enabler and the other one was, hey, you screw up and I fix it. All right, we're running out of time. But we're ending on a good
yes, note we are.
There, all right? All right, back after this, you keep it where you got it. News Radio 840 WHAS.